Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Today is going to be a really fun episode for me. I hope it is for you too, because it's with Alexi Neal. And when Alexi wrote me a little note about being on the show, I could only say yes, because it's something that we don't talk about enough. And that has to do with hypermobility and the need for strength training as yoga people. You know, even if you're not hypermobile in all of your joints and you don't look like the model on the cover of Yoga Journal, you know, I think sometimes we think, oh, I'm not hypermobile. I can barely touch my toes. I must not be hypermobile. Well, maybe not every joint in your body is hypermobile, making you look like the Yoga Journal woman. But if you even have certain joints that are hypermobile, like your SI joint, that is a problem. And you have to get your glutes working again. You have to get your quads and your hamstrings and your transverse abdominis. All these surrounding muscles have to turn on again to help stabilize that hypermobile SI joint. So Alexi and I take our time in this conversation getting to the point, but I'm just going to tell you the point is, please, every single one of you out there, get on a strength training program. Not only is it good for hypermobility, but we're starting to see the connection between things like leg strength and Alzheimer's. This research just came out recently that they can actually tie your leg strength in later life to how likely you are to get Alzheimer's. So it's really important that we all maintain our muscle mass. We all do strength training 2 or 3 times a week. And there's a variety of ways you can do that. You can go to a class, you can get some dumbbells, you can do some kettlebells, you can do squats and lunges at your local park, you can do Pilates Reformer. I even know people that do some of their asana practice with weights in their hands. I'm not a big fan of that, but some people love it. It works for some people. The idea is that you need to be mindfully lifting some weights, coordinating with breath, connecting with your body, but basically putting load on. And so many of us have spent our whole yoga time creating openness and flexibility to the point where our bodies are completely destabilized. And that may be because we came into yoga hypermobile, but for a lot of us, yoga actually injured us. All of this asana was never meant to be a circus-like performer, or it was never meant to look like a gymnast. Asana was supposed to prepare us for breath work, pranayama, meditation, deeper states of consciousness. We didn't have to do tree pose and pigeon pose and wheel pose and handstand and headstand. Those weren't actually part of the traditional yoga. We added those in about, 500 to 1,000 years ago. So let's think about it. Let's think about how are we going to get some strength training into our week. And Alexi and I have a lot of ideas about that. By the end, you'll get some ideas on how you might be able to add some weight training into your day. All right, let's go meet Alexi Neal. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. This is Amy Wheeler. We're in the second half of 2025, and we've spent this entire year telling stories of health, healing, and beyond with yoga therapy, yoga, and Ayurveda. I hope you'll join us for the second half of the year where we hear people who are courageous and generous and authentic and kind, telling about their life experience so that they can help others out there who might be going through something similar. Let's get into season 9 and hear more stories about people just like you. All right, on to the show. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour, Alexi.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Alexi, where are you joining us from?
I am in Littleton, Colorado, just outside of Denver.
Nice. Have you been there quite a long time?
I moved to Colorado in 2012. So, yeah, I've been here for a little bit now. Definitely feels like home.
Great. We haven't had that many people from Colorado on the show, so welcome.
Ooh, awesome. Represent for you.
So, Alexi, tell us just a little bit about who you are, what you love, what you're passionate about. It doesn't even have to do with yoga if you don't want it to. I just like people to kind of get a little feel for you if they're listening.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a big part of the reason that I moved to Colorado is that I love the nature here, and I've always felt really connected to. I feel like the mountains took me deeper into my relationship with nature. And so that is a big piece of my life. I'm also a mom. I've got a 1.5-year-old and an almost 4-year-old. So very much still in the little kid phase of life, which is intense and beautiful, really beautiful. I have been a yogi for much of my life. I started in when I was 12 years old in my living room with my mom watching DVDs of Rodney Yee. So it's been a part of my life for a long time now, but I got into yoga therapy in 2017 is when I started that journey. And I've kind of ebbed and flowed in and out of doing that as work. I've also done a lot of study around neuroscience as well as training and energy healing. And so, really, like finding the blend of things that works for me and works for the people that I serve. But yeah, my transition into motherhood 4 years ago, as we'll talk about, definitely a catalyst for a lot of shifts in the way that I approach work and approach yoga. And so now I think a lot of my passion is in working with that transition to motherhood and working with other mothers that are in that space and how we can really deepen into that experience and really honor it in a way that I don't think our culture has been very good at for a long time.
I love that. I teach a business class and everyone wants to like do some random topic that they never have experienced themselves. And while I think that's okay sometimes, I also think it's much more organic when you've been there, you've felt it, you struggled with it, you wrestled with it, you learned how to manage whatever it is you were working with, and then you have some organic wisdom to share with people. So I love that as you're going through motherhood and realizing the challenges and that the support isn't there, that you're willing to help other women. I know that's a big market of women.
Yeah. Every woman that I talk to, I think when you get beneath the surface, every mother that I talk to, there is this sense of like something isn't quite right in the way that we approach motherhood from a cultural standpoint, but there's this opportunity and this richness, like on the ground level of like person-to-person relationships, where we can start to unravel some of that and do some healing around it in sort of this way that's like inclusive of, but also in some ways separate from like the overculture and the narrative that's there. Because I think, especially in today's world, like there's a big draw to like go inward, right? And to really be in that community care space that's a little more that village feel, I think is what I'm getting at,
Yeah.
not necessarily waiting for society to catch up.
So this is what I've found, and we don't have to go into this, but motherhood is, not in the village like it used to be. When your own mother passes away, like, woof, nobody's talking about that. And you need a village. Some of us did, I should say. And then the third one is the whole perimenopause thing. It's almost like menopause is talked about, but perimenopause, nobody warns you about the hell that's awaiting you. So anyway, that trifecta, we need this village back to help us through those things. So.
We do. And I mean, I think that really speaks to the way that women's health and well-being has been devalued culturally. There's a lot to unpack and unravel through that, and a lot of like internalized misogyny. I still run into things that are just like, oh, wow. And rewiring my own relationship to like my menstrual cycle and how my body works that. I think for so many of us growing up, it's just the whole point is to hide all of that. And then as we get older, it becomes the same thing. We hide the struggles in motherhood. We hide the struggles of perimenopause because there's something that feels like we should be ashamed of it. And so I think a lot of this work is bringing all of that stuff into the light and saying, like, hey, this is something that many of us go through and many of us need more support around. Can we talk about it? Can we be more open about it?
I know this isn't our topic for today, but it's so fascinating. I even think of all the women throughout all of time in history who have not been allowed to talk about what's real about being a woman, all the way to the point that they're called insane or that they have mental illness because nobody's talking about this stuff and it needs to be talked about. It the village needs to come together for us. So I don't know, I'm just sending a little message out there to all the women throughout all of time in history who haven't been supported with their mental, emotional, physical, spiritual health. And I'm really glad that you're going for it.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Alexi, today we're actually going to talk about something a little different than that. I mean, related, but when I saw your note to me about what you wanted to talk about, I was like, hell yes. Yes, please, let's talk about this. So, let's talk about the earlier days when you were doing specific types of yoga and how that was making your body feel and how wonderful that was for you. And then we'll take that on a timeline up to current day. So take us back, take us way back.
Okay. We're going to go way back. Because, like I mentioned, I started yoga when I was 12 years old. And this was very much like right off the bat, I loved that I felt capable in my body. And that feeling of being capable, of feeling strong, of feeling like, oh, I can do that. I mean, almost intoxicating in some way. And I think it was the first time for me and for my body that I really felt that way. And so that became a big passion in my life. And I did a lot of mostly vinyasa yoga, power yoga. I never got into hot yoga. I'm too pitta. That was overwhelming, but very active practices that tended, at least in the classes that I was doing, to really encourage depth, encourage intensity. By depth, I mean like going to your end range of movement and encouraging the most intense sensations that we can tolerate and learning how to sit with that discomfort. And that was the impact that that has on the mind, for sure. I felt that in every single class, like this sense of presence that I could find when my body was experiencing something so intense that I was like, I had no choice but to be present with it, you know? And that's so much of the magic of the yoking and the yoga, that we can fuse in that way our awareness to our body. So yeah, that was many years of doing yoga many times a week, almost every day, you know, ebbs and flows and being a young adult as happens. But then I did my yoga teacher training, my initial like 200 hour yoga teacher training in 2012. And I would say from that point on, pretty regular practice and mostly vinyasa through that time. Got into like bhakti vinyasa practices and devotional practices, fusing that into the movement as well, which was beautiful and sacred.
You know, that idea of a young woman being able to be self-empowered in her body. I mean, it kind of goes back to our original theme. Like, I know we get that in sport also, if we've participated in sport or maybe in acting or singing. I mean, I'm sure there's a variety of ways for young women to feel empowered, but there's something different about doing it through yoga where you really understand you can regulate yourself. You know, it's not a performance for someone else, but there's a self-regulation that's happening where you're coming home to self and you're able to manage your energy, your moods, your breath. Like, that's a very powerful realization to have as any woman at any time of life, but I think especially a young woman.
You know, I think that's so true. And I think that getting it to not be a performance was actually quite a bit of my work in those early years, and quite a bit of what I was doing in my practice was trying to strip away that sense of performing for the other people in class. And then that really did get challenging when I began teaching, because then there's this sense of, you know, now people are looking to me to show them the right, quote unquote, right way to do this. And that extended beyond the mat as well. And so I think there was some stickiness for me actually in maintaining that sense of being in my body and honoring my body without much concern for what other people were thinking of how I looked in my practice, you know. And it's all very well intentioned, but I actually had some teachers, you know, after class be like, oh, you have such a beautiful practice. And like, that is sort of a common thing that we say as a way of honoring. I think mostly what teachers are seeing in that is you looked really present in the practice, right? Like they're not necessarily saying, oh, it was so beautiful that you could do these poses in this way. But because of the language and because as a young woman, beauty and appearance is so important, I think it gets a little sticky. It got a little sticky for me.
And I'm going to push back on that. I can't tell you how many yoga teachers, when they see someone who can do the asana like a gymnast, do say, oh, yeah, such a beautiful practice. So I think it's both, you know, because there's a lot of people who are very present that maybe aren't on the external looking so perfect, you know?
Can there be presence without it necessarily looking graceful? You know, and I think the answer is yes, like absolutely yes. We can be profoundly present and have it not look fluid or like the yogic ideal of movement.
You know, something that you had mentioned to me in what you wrote me is that you were hypermobile. And I think hypermobile people get seen as the more senior students in the class, and they get seen as the ones who can do everything, and we should all be following them. And so tell me about your hypermobility, because it's a blessing and a curse, right?
It is. Yeah, it really is. And it's not something that I really became aware of until my 20s. I had a string of incidents where I sprained my wrists, sprained my ankles. And then I also had a skiing accident that wasn't really related to hypermobility, but it impacted my hips and pelvis significantly. And that's when the hypermobility in my hips and pelvis became clear. So I started having pain in my sacroiliac joint. And so around the time that I was doing my yoga therapy training, and I think part of it actually was the amount of yoga that I was doing in that season of my life. I think this is largely still true today, that like hypermobility isn't really talked about in yoga classes, and it's not really addressed that for some people, going to the end ranges of motion is not alignment that is in their highest and best. And I think that was very true for me. And so, yeah, about 2017 was when I started just having chronic pain. I could feel my SI joint, which should have a tiny little bit of mobility, right? But I could feel it slide in and out on the left side. That doesn't seem like how that's supposed to work, you know? So yeah, it was through conversations actually with people in my yoga therapy training that I started to think, oh, maybe that's what's happening. Maybe I have too much mobility in my joints. And it was difficult though.
Let's just talk about the ligaments. I mean, they are there to stabilize. Let's just use the SI joint. We're not supposed to overstretch them. We're not supposed to fold so flatly into a pancake that they get overstretched or Janu Sirsasana. But yet that is reinforced in classes, like, oh, come all the way down with your head on your knee. And it's just so interesting. I think when a body is young and very pliable and folds and moves in all directions with ease, of course, that's fine. But as we age and our bodies become less pliable, to keep expecting them to do that and then end up overstretching the ligaments, it's very problematic.
I think one of the hardest pieces of this transition and awareness and learning my body as I got older was learning that there were some things that felt good in the moment, like pigeon pose. I love it. And I miss it. And I cannot do it because it feels good in the moment. And I think part of that is an association that's, you know, decades in the making, right? Of like certain sensations being associated with positive experiences, right? I could get to a place of depth, can release into gravity, like that feeling, but it was not okay for my hips and my pelvis because it would pull in ways that would get me out of alignment. And so in the moment, it would feel great, but getting up out of the posture, or sometimes it wasn't until I was trying to get out of bed the next day that it was like, oh, And I think it took many, many times of having these painful experiences before I really started to reckon with the fact that I had to change my practice. And I don't think I really got serious about changing it for good until I got pregnant and started dealing with severe pelvic dysfunction and pelvic pain. So, yeah.
I'd like to take just a moment away from the episode to tell you about something that's really precious to us here at the Optimal State. And that's our Monday Night Sangha. There are so many of us that have come together for several years now on Monday nights. It's about an hour and a half class where we really set ourselves up for the week. We start with talking about one of the Yoga Sutra of Patanjali's as it pertains to our topic of the month. So in November, that is kind of reflecting on 2025 and thinking about how to go inward for November and December and really settle ourselves before we move into the new year. So we'll choose Yoga Sutra that are all about reflecting, all about going inward. And then possibly towards the end of the month, talk about setting intentions with powerful manifestation, and how do we have a great 2026? So that's our topic for November. We do a little discussion, we do some postures, some breath work, a little bit of yoga nidra meditation, and then we come back at the end for another discussion. These are really potent sessions to start your week off right. We invite all of you. You can be there live or watch the recording, but we would love to have you with us on Monday nights, especially as we move into 2026. All right, everybody, let's get back to the podcast and thank you for listening. We'll go there in a moment, but I want to stay with this idea of something has worked for us in the past and it felt so good. And then suddenly, as our bodies changed, it doesn't work anymore. And we have a hard time letting that go. Like, this always used to work for me. How come it's not doing it anymore? How come I'm having pain now? And as I got older and my musculature used to be very able to concentrically and eccentrically contract, now the muscle was less flexible, I guess, and my ligaments were taking the brunt of it. So just to compensate, and it may not compensate in a way that is a good thing.
Yeah, I think it gets very challenging when something has brought us so much joy, so much pleasure, so much sense of connection to ourselves, connection to community. It's a very different feeling now, I think, being in a yoga class because I'm not the one anymore who's doing all of the things. I'm 35 years old, like in a lot of ways. And I think what's interesting is in many ways, I'm much stronger than I was in my 20s because I've been forced to become much stronger. But there is some ego work in that, right? Of like being able to be the person in the class and just having your own experience and not needing to go to the edges, even when the teacher is encouraging you there, because that's definitely something I experience a lot where they see this sense of holding back and there isn't enough education around hypermobility to understand why somebody might be holding themselves back.
Oh, I love that you know your body better than a teacher who's looking at you for the first or second or 10th time. You're taking care of yourself, and they're saying, oh, but I have the desire to see you in this form, right? And I was also thinking of there are some things that we get a benefit from, and they are also problematic. I was even thinking about the benefits of like working with your fascia, maybe releasing some emotions. Let's just say in pigeon pose or a yin pose or something. There can be benefits, and also at the same time, stretch ligaments. Both can be true at the
That's
same time,
right.
right?
Yes. Thank you for naming that because I think that is a lot of what I have experienced is that both and of, in the moment, like, oh, I just want to be there. I want to feel that sense of surrender of my pelvis, of my womb to the gravity. I want to feel that sense of being held by the earth in this way. And there's something in the moment that is nourishing about that. And also not necessarily what my body really needs for long-term sustainability and long-term health and movement, right?
Yeah, that's a whole nother facet that what helps us in the short term, if we keep doing that and have that pattern over 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, you know, it's not supportive over the long term, even though in the short term, there are some really nice benefits.
Right.
All right. So now you're discovering that this hypermobility may not be serving you. And what happens next?
So I did begin adapting my practice in like 2018, 2019. I knew that something was going on and I started bringing in more strength training. I wasn't only doing yoga anymore at that point because I had the sense that something needed to shift. But I was also still feeling attached, honestly, feeling attached to my yoga practice as it was and as it had been, and trying to figure out, is there a way that I can keep that, but also support my body enough that I don't have pain? And I think sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't, you know? But when I got pregnant in 2021, I pretty quickly developed pelvic dysfunction that had me in a pelvic floor PT's office at 14 weeks pregnant. And I just remember her looking at me and looking at my chart and going, what are you doing here? Like, this is way too early, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking little kidney beans.
Yeah. Yes, right. Right. But my body had so little stability in my pelvis that even that early, the introduction of relaxin into my system, which is the hormone that increases ligament and tendon flexibility for a very wonderful purpose, but also it does this throughout the entire body. And so my whole body was getting looser as I was pregnant. And then just that small increase.
Can I ask, that's even happening at 14 weeks? I thought that was much later in the pregnancy. It starts that early, huh?
I believe it does. Yeah, I believe it starts in like maybe 10-ish, 11-ish weeks. Wow. It's like it really reaches its peak in the second trimester. Okay. But yeah, it starts getting introduced to the body at that point. Yeah, so that component. And then yeah, just the slight increase in weight of my uterus was enough that the pressure on my pelvis was pulling on those tendons and ligaments, which, you know, there's all of these beautiful interconnected ways that the pelvic bowl holds and supports our whole body, you know. But one of the things that was pulling was that place on the left side of my SI joint. And so I was having like chronic hip pain and then connection point to the top of my pubic bone. And so between the two, I could barely walk. I was in so much pain that I could barely walk. And my go-to for coping emotionally, which, you know, emotions are quite heightened during that period as well, was always yoga. But I would go to yoga and yoga would hurt. And I hadn't been exposed yet to the right teachers to learn how to modify in the right ways, you know, that I needed for my body. And so I was just sort of floundering around on my own. And one of the beautiful pieces of my yoga therapy training was this sense of like, you are your own highest authority. You are your own best teacher. You know your body better than anybody else. But I think at that time, that twisted around a little bit in this painful way of like, I should be able to figure this out. And I can't. I'm in immense pain. And so seeking help, I mean, this is such a theme in motherhood in general, I think. But starting the process of seeking help from a pelvic floor PT was difficult, but also so necessary. I was in so much pain, I wasn't able to live life normally.
So many things are coming to my mind. One of them being, you know, from the outside, it might look like, oh, there's just the weight of a kidney bean inside of you. But when we think from the subtle body and what was actually happening inside your womb, that a miracle of life had begun, the subtle energies, like some explosion. I mean, there was a lot going on there that we can't see with the physical eye. That's one thing that I just thought about, like, wow, that's amazing.
Just on that subtle body piece, I think it's important to name that became pregnant at the beginning of 2021. So this is like, we've been in pandemic time for several months. It felt very emotionally intense and distressing that it still felt like we were in that space. And it was a surprise. This was not planned. And when you mentioned the subtle body piece, to me, what immediately came to mind was that even though it was so small, my baby was so small at that point, it felt like such a weight because I was coping with a world that was unlike the one that I grew up in or I had imagined raising children in and had conceptualized that we'd have a couple more years to figure out what to do with this new world that we were in before we started having kids. And so I think all of that was very present in my womb at the time.
And as we know, that kind of mental, emotional, spiritual instability is very connected to the stability of our sacrum and our pelvic floor.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, with the root being there at the tailbone, and I did also experience tailbone pain at times and that sense of uncertainty of what is this world that doesn't look like the one that I grew up in? And what is this body now that doesn't feel like the one that I grew up in? Increasingly, every day feels less and less like my own. Like that really does impact the root chakra in a profound way.
Especially for someone that had been so self-empowered in her body. Almost sounds like something was kind of taken away from you, the rug pulled out from underneath you, like all this trust and connection you had with your body. And now it's like, wait a minute, what's going on? And how come I can't figure this out by myself?
Yeah. And then the stakes feel so high because now I'm growing a human, right? And there's so much messaging given to pregnant women about how important our well-being is to the well-being of our baby. And obviously there's a lot of truth to that. I think there is also this pressure on mothers to be solely responsible for their well-being during pregnancy, to have total agency over their diet, over their exercise, over, you know, building the community and buying all of the right things and doing things in such a way because it matters so deeply to the development of the baby. And the reality is that we cannot do all of that.
No.
On our own. We cannot be solely responsible for our own well-being, which saying that out loud, it's like I hear that sentence. And if you just take that sound bite, it can sound disempowering. But what we're talking about is the fact that we are meant to be interconnected, interrelational beings.
Back to the village. I mean, even the early days when I was studying in India, I was so shocked because a woman would get pregnant. And I would see that she moved out of her home. She left her husband at the house, moved in with her parents, who basically took care of her for a lot of the pregnancy. They served her food and made sure she never got upset and that she was not watching any scary movies. And I just kept asking, why is he over there at home? And they're like, we don't want him to disturb her. I was like, wow, that is so interesting. He's allowed to come visit if he can behave. You know, it's so different.
Wow.
We experienced and all the aunties and grandmas that she wasn't allowed to do cleaning, any cooking. She literally needed to relax and enjoy herself. A little different.
Very, very different. One of my favorite anecdotes from the book, The Fourth Trimester by Kimberly Ann Johnson, is she's talking about when she's past her due date, walking around the streets in Mexico, and she's talking to a woman that she knew that lived in her neighborhood and said something about how she felt so lazy. She wasn't doing much at that point. And the woman's response was, oh, how delicious. Like that is so counter to the way that we think of productivity in our society. You know, so many women work all the way up to or past their due dates, work to the moment that they go into labor. And the goal postpartum is to get back to your productivity level as quickly as possible. That's seen as being successful in becoming a mother, that you've returned to an outward appearance of participating in society as quickly as possible. And it's really different than many traditional cultures that really see the immense transformation that happens in motherhood and work to honor and support it rather than, you know, okay, produce a human and then get back.
So you are with the physical therapist. You found out you have major pelvic floor issues. I don't know if it's too personal, but some people may not understand what collapsed pelvic area, like what were you experiencing? Was it mainly pain or were there incontinence? Like if someone were listening that they would know, like, oh, that's what that was.
Yeah, so at that point in my pregnancy, it was pain and mobility issues. I mean, yeah, pelvic floor issues can span a really wide range, including, incontinence, prolapse. We see those, I think, more on the later in pregnancy or postpartum side of things when the bladder gets really compromised. But yeah, that definitely can be a part of it. And pelvic floor PT, I mean, I just always have to put a plug for that because there are many really powerful healing modalities in the world. And that I think is far more necessary for so many people, than we're told.
What is the discovery that you have when you work with this pelvic floor therapist, or is it something you found out on your own that started working for you?
So I think the first thing that happened was validation of, yes, you are hypermobile. That's the only explanation that there could be for you being in so much pain at this stage of your pregnancy. And given that hypermobility, we need to be stabilizing, fortifying, and strengthening and containing, giving the ligaments and tendons support to contain rather than opening and stretching into them. And this is an interesting thing with pregnancy too, because the go-to recommendation for movement is prenatal yoga, right? I am now a prenatal yoga teacher, and I am also one who's just like constantly talking about how we can use yoga to support not just open or to open mindfully and intentionally the places that we do want to encourage opening while giving support to the foundation. And by foundation, I'm talking about the pelvic girdle, the hips, the glute muscles, the groin muscles. Like these were places that I really needed to be strengthening and getting to turn on. And so one piece with that, my own particular body with that skiing accident. It was sort of a wild freak accident, honestly. I ran into a kid. I was a new skier and he cut in front of me and I run into him and I knock him out of his skis and I land on the tip of his ski. So his ski goes about an inch into my glute muscle on the left side, right above my SI joint. So that glute just was not firing. It was not turning on when my body needed it to support my sacroiliac joint and my pelvis.
I mean, long term, like that ski incident caused an injury, probably some scar tissue, and then it never really turned on right again after that for years.
Yes, for years. And so to your earlier point about compensation, like my body learned ways to compensate for essentially an inactive glute muscle that were problematic then when the contents of my pelvis started changing because it had learned how to cope given a particular way of being. And then when that started changing, it's like, well, I don't know how to cope with this. I don't know how to support this now. So yeah, very dramatic changes from that one injury. So my journey very much became like, how do I strengthen? How do I create more stability? And so it's a lot of root work and a lot of balancing of masculine and feminine energies, right? Like, I think my yoga practice for a long time was an expression of feminine energy, of fluidity, of creativity, of opening and receptivity, and introducing a sense of containment, of not necessarily pulling back, but like honoring the boundaries of my body, even the ones that might not feel in the moment like they were boundaries, but ones that I knew in my own wisdom needed to be boundaries to hold. The biggest shift at that point was I started picking up heavy weights. I think before that, I was very much the like, okay, like I'll do some sculpt stuff, I'll do some bar, get some like 3 pound weights, 5 pound weights. And through the pelvic floor PT work was how I was like, they need to be heavier. We need to really up the ante a little bit. I mean, I love it. Like I'm still just completely addicted to that
Addicting.
way of moving. And it's like I get that feeling in my body now. It's like I need to go pick up some heavy weights, I think part of what felt so good about it too was a different sort of pleasurable experience in my body that did feel really new when I could feel that sense of strength and solidity, especially when I had so much pain from flexibility. That was just like, oh, wow, I needed that. And I didn't even realize how much I needed that.
I actually think this is the newest discovery for yoga people is heavy strength training.
Yes.
I am seeing it all over the place. There's a lovely woman, she calls her business Sun and Moon Yoga, and it's all about addiction and recovery. And I saw her just lifting the heck out of weights the other day on a little Instagram video. And I was like, yes, this is the next frontier. Not because it's part of our yoga practice per se, but maybe we've all misused asana so terribly because asana wasn't meant to be gymnastics like. It was meant to prepare us for breathing and meditation, and we took it way too far. Now we all need to come back and build that structural strength and stability that we have compromised in our own bodies. Or maybe, some of us through genetics, through childhood sports, through neurodiversity and divergence, there are just a lot of people who kind of have a loose structure. So I just think so many of us are loving the weight training. And also, I don't know about you, but I get so many happy chemicals and hormones when I weight train. Oof. So what do you think?
I think the proprioceptive and interoceptive like input from strength training is really powerful and really matches a lot of the science that we've used to talk about the benefits of yoga, very much in alignment. There's definitely crossover in how we use the breath to support moving in ways that maybe our mind doesn't think we're capable of. Like, I think there's a lot of similarities in some of the mental work of strength training, and it is really regulating for our nervous systems. There's so much that our body receives, that our vagus nerve receives from that heavy input and from feeling that sense of structure and containment too. It really creates a felt sense of safety in the body.
I actually tell people who have vata imbalance, where they're kind of all over the place, maybe feeling scattered in their mind or disembodied, the quickest, best way to get back in your body and get focused is heavy weights. And they look at me like, what? I'm supposed to be doing yoga. I'm like, it is yoga.
It is okay.
It's a tool of yoga. Go lift weights. I love to give that to people. And then, of course, we know the benefits on your bones. There's so many great benefits. Long term, in terms of your mind and body, too. What does your strength training routine look like these days, Alexi?
Yeah, it's all in my basement. That's just how it works in life right now, which I think that's a piece of motherhood that I've really come to appreciate and embrace, is how it encouraged me to get more efficient and more clear on like what exactly I need in order to get there, to get to the place that I need to get to and to truly support my body. So got my basement, I've got my weights a few times a week. Get down there and I use a variety of different classes. I kind of bounce around between different things to try to keep it fresh for the sake of my brain, but it always comes back to squats, really. That's the biggest thing I have to get in every day is squats for my body. And I think there's so many different like access points now. Like we have so many different apps that can like help us get a little bit closer. And then there's people that can help guide us if we want a little bit more of that like alignment coaching too. It can be really accessible once you have the weights. Like that's really the biggest piece, you know? And I think if we get up in our heads about needing to get to a gym and, you know, carve out the time for a whole like hour long gym session, like that can be a really big barrier. And so I'm a big fan of like, how do we make it more simple? Because that's sort of my baseline, right? Is that like, if I pick up one weight and do a set of goblet squats and that's all that can happen today, I know that I'm meeting my body's needs. And that is a whole new form of empowerment, right? We can, you know, also shoot for more on the days that more is accessible.
I am so with you on this. I was going to all these classes at the Y, which is fantastic, but it took me 20 minutes to drive over, get set up, park, go in the building, an hour-long class, and then 20 minutes to get home. And I just do not have almost 2 hours a day right now. I just don't. So I'm like you, I'm in my basement and I've got my, I did get a Pilates reformer because to me
Oh,
that
nice.
is so good for my sacrum and strength training. And then dumbbells, I just have a variety, kettlebells, all sorts of different things that on different days I can just take 15 or 20 minutes. It doesn't have to be a big, huge workout, but every day I do something a little different.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like most days, I think it's about 20 minutes. You know, that 20 minutes does so much mentally, emotionally, and physically. And I see so many ways that my earlier yoga practice contributes to the way that I show up in that now. I think there is still quite a bit of culture in like gym culture and strength training culture that's a little bit, you know, closer to diet culture and trying like exercising for the sake of looking a particular way. And I think one of the benefits of all of that work that I did in my 20s around being in my body for the sake of my body and then really reckoning with what my body actually needs is like, I am not here to make my body look any particular way, right? Like, I am not here to achieve anything beyond feeling good in my body and feeling strong in my body and honoring my needs. So, yeah, it just doesn't matter if I'm picking up the same weights that I've been doing for 6 months. There have been moments, there's always moments that we want to like push, right? We want to see if we can go a little bit farther. And there's some moments that my body really welcomes that. And it's like, beautiful, great. And then there's other moments that it's like, actually, that's too much. And learning how to be with that and ignore, you know, whatever the coach is saying in my ear about like, go pick up those heavier weights, you know, and just ignoring it and saying no, because I care about how I feel later today when I try to pick up my kiddo. That matters so much more than this moment of trying to prove myself to a person that doesn't exist.
The lady in the television screaming at you.
I mean, she does exist.
I think bringing the mindfulness and the breath to it, because I was trying to do all these hard Pilates workouts and my mid back started killing me. And it didn't occur to me that I was causing my mid back injury in Pilates. I never put that together. But then as soon as I stopped doing that particular sequence, my back felt better. So then I figured it out. So I think that's another big thing as we age too. Like we can lift heavy weights, but we have to do it with mindful attention. There's a range that each of us can work in.
Yeah. Working with acceptance, acknowledging the fact that we have choice, even if we're in a class, even if we're in a program, like we always have choice and really honoring our own wisdom to make those choices. And I think that makes any form of exercise we do yoga.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Alexi, we're coming to a close. If somebody wanted to work with you or schedule an appointment with you to talk about anything that we've discussed today, how could they reach out to you?
So my website is Soulful Somatics, and that's Soulful with two L's, Soulful somatics.com. And then I'm also on Instagram at Soulful with two L's again, dot Alexi. And yeah, I'd love to connect. I'm working a lot with mothers right now, pregnancy through postpartum. Pelvic floor yoga therapy has become a big piece of my work. I'm also a postpartum doula and really enjoying supporting women through this transition.
Wonderful. Wow, so much goodness. Well, thank you, Alexi, for being with us today. It's been a pleasure to get to know you a little bit.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, Amy, and thanks for a great conversation.
Thank you, Alexi, for being with us today. Such an important message on many, many levels. Everything from women need more support, we need to talk about things, we need a village to help us through these life transitions, such as motherhood and beyond. And I love your website. I went and looked up at your website after the show called Soulful with two L's, Somatics, Holistic Postpartum Doula, and Trauma Informed Somatic Healer. And that's what the world needs right there. So, you have services and classes. You can schedule a free consultation, co-regulated postpartum circles virtually and in person, prenatal yoga classes and ceremonies. Wonderful. Soulful pregnancy program. Lovely. And being a postpartum doula, I would assume they need to live near you in Colorado to take advantage of that. But just so many beautiful services. And I love that you are neuroscience informed, trauma informed. It's just really nice to see all of the wonderful offerings that you have. So go check out her website. And you know, when Alexi was talking about lifting weights in her basement because it's efficient, you can get it done, you don't need a big gym membership, I started kind of laughing because in my basement, I also have a gym, if you will. And much of my gym I have collected over about 20 years. Some of it I've gotten at garage sales. Some of it I have found at the thrift store. Other things I've inherited from people. They just were moving and they said, does anybody want this? I have spent some very good money on a Pilates reformer. If you know what Pilates reformers cost, you know, that was like a big deal. Didn't get a vacation that year. But I kind of wanted to show you all the different things in my basement. So some of you are listening to this audio. You're not going to get to see each thing. You'll have to go to YouTube if you want to see it. But I'm showing you this because it doesn't need to be fancy. My basement is not redone. It's nothing special. But it's where I put on some really good music. I have nice speakers down there. And sometimes I'll listen to a podcast or I'll listen to a class that I've missed and I want to make up. Or like last night, I just put on Taylor Swift and did some working out to some really good music. So let's get started kind of looking at some of the different things that I have in my basement for strength training specifically. So one of the first things that I have is this kind of total body weight training machine. You can see it's a great big machine. I did get this at Costco many, many years ago, but I can do just about every push and pull exercise that a woman would ever need to do with fairly heavy weights using this machine. If I go over to my stationary bike, I've had that for almost 20 years. I use that for interval training, I do warm-ups, I do cool-downs, I do spin classes, like pull up YouTube and put a spin class on and check out how to do the stationary bike. I use kettlebells to do free weight training. I use dumbbells to do free weight training. So there's some things that I want to do open chain exercises mainly. And so I'll do all sorts of things with the kettlebells and dumbbells. And I have all different sizes from 3 pounds up to 25 pounds or more. I told you I have a Pilates reformer. I've just gotten this in the last year. And for anyone with loose ligaments in their sacral iliac area, it is a game changer. I love this thing. It supports me while I lift weights, basically. And if my sacrum is ever hurting and I can't do lunges or squats or something like that, this thing saves me every time. It also is very regulating to my nervous system. So I don't know what it is, if it's the smooth movement coordinated with breath, because the carriage moves, you know, forward and back each time. Some of the other things I have in my basement, I use a little, what I call a glute band that I wrap just above my knees. Here's one I have in my hand with some stripes on it. And that I can do like monster walks and clamshells and hip extensions, all sorts of things to keep my glutes happy. And then a couple things that I do for my nervous system specifically, maybe during my workout, but maybe just 5 or 10 minutes throughout the day, I have a little mini jumping trampoline where I just come and jump for 30 seconds to 5 minutes, and that will help me reset my nervous system. It's also very good for the lymph, to get the lymph flowing. And then I also have this little vibration plate over here that just, you stand on it, you can do lunges, squats, push-ups. There's so many things you can do on it, but you could just stand on it. And again, that helps for me to regulate my nervous system as well as move lymph. I'm very conscious of making sure my immune system is healthy. So those are, the trampoline and the vibration plate are very much for that. So I do a variety of things throughout the day. It's different every single day. I try to spend 15 or 20 minutes down here. I also try to walk every day. And I don't do yoga asana every single day. I do yoga. I do pranayama. I do meditation. I do chanting. But my body at my age does not feel good to do strong asana every day. I just feel like I get too stretched out. So I wanted to show you my little basement gym. As I said, it's nothing fancy. I have everything I need. I don't have to pay for a gym membership, and I don't have to drive to the gym, and it's very, very efficient. I can do it between meetings. So if you ever get on a meeting with me and I'm huffing and puffing and looking like I'm sweating, I probably just did my workout between meetings because I think that's really good to get out of our chair during the day and to work a little bit before we sit back down for another meeting. So it's very easy for me to slip in between things. All right, everybody, just wanted to show you what you two can start building. That took me about 20 years to put all of that together. You can start with one piece of equipment or go to the thrift store and get some dumbbells or kettlebells. All of those little pieces of equipment I got at the thrift store. So oftentimes they have brand new stuff there. My kettlebells came in the box, you know, so don't be afraid to reuse things so we're not filling up the landfill so much. All right. Thanks for being here today. It's been a pleasure to be with you, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you to our guest this week, and thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. Something that I've been working on behind the scenes with my friend Marlisa Sullivan is going to come out in 2026. We've been writing a book together for the last year where we go deeply into yoga philosophy and yoga therapy. And then we have the scientific vagus nerve, heart rate variability, all sorts of polyvagal theory to back up why it is that yoga philosophy is right on track and why it's been helping people for thousands of years. We're turning in our book this fall to the publisher, and in the spring of 2026, it should come out. So we're just giving you a little heads up that that will be coming out soon. And when it does, we can't wait to share it with you.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.